Hi, thanks for listening to one of our Sunday talks from the Center for Spiritual Living in Midtown Atlanta. If this is your first time listening to one of our talks, we certainly hope you enjoy it. But if you're a regular listener to our podcast, we would like you to consider contributing to our center. It's easy to do. All you have to do is go on our website, and it's easy to find the button and make a contribution. That will allow us to continue bringing these talks to you on a regular basis in the future. Once again, thanks for listening.
Every time Monica plays on Sunday, I'm sitting there and I have to wake myself up to come back up here. It's just so you get into kind of a meditative state. At our house, the Christmas special is the movie Elf. So a little bit different, but anyway. Listening to Lee mention that essay by Dr. Bitzer and stuff, it's kind of funny because my talk next week is entitled Giving Till It Feels Good, which is basically, you know, the same thing, but it's a great concept. We'll be talking about that next week. But this morning, the title of my talk is Order is Heaven's First Law. Anybody familiar with that quote? A couple of you heard it? Two people. Pretty good. No English majors out there, all right? It came from an English poet by the name of Alexander Pope. He wasn't a pope. His last name was Pope. And he was one of the voices of the Enlightenment period in the 1700s in England and France and Germany. Some of us are familiar with some of his other famous quotes. To err is human, to forgive divine. Same guy. And one of my personal favorites is, a little learning is a dangerous thing. It's always two. That's sort of like the Emerson quote that I love so much when he says, beware when the great God lets loose a thinker upon the planet, for then all things are at risk. You know, those are great quotes. Anyway, order is heaven's first law. When we hear a statement that is that clear and straightforward, most of us probably have a fairly definite reaction. And our reaction to a phrase like that is probably based, get that out of there, on all the words that come to mind when we hear the word order. For example, if you spent time in the military, as I did, or attended a military college, I did that too, or had a drill instructor for a father, I had that too. See, order? See what I think about? The word order brings to mind something like a screaming upperclassman, you know, telling you to put your chin in and chest out and all this kind of stuff. Or if you came out of a fairly strict family, I know a lot of people come into this kind of teaching from some very strict religious backgrounds, where your parents gave you orders instead of talking to you like a real person, then the word order might make you feel a little uncomfortable. For some of us, what comes to mind are words like discipline and control and obedience, which are all authority words. But one thing I've discovered since I have been in this teaching, a little over 30 years now, is that people who are attracted to teachings like this one, to an open spiritual belief system like this one, are not usually big on authority. Okay? People who are attracted to these churches have authority issues. That's why you're here. Okay? Am I wrong? Okay, we like to march to the beat of our own drummer, which is why if you look around this room right now, if you haven't done it before, look around and see how extremely diverse this group is in gender, race, age, gay, straight, everything. But we all show up here week after week in the same place, listening to the same message because we have something in common. And what we have in common is that we have decided to think for ourselves in everything in our life, but especially with something as important as our own spiritual growth. You know, there's a certain tension, I think, when we hear the words order and heaven and law all in the same sentence. It's kind of a funny feeling, because if heaven means God, and order means authority, then any law that comes out of that connection is probably not a law that's going to give us a whole lot of freedom, a whole lot of choices, let alone a law that we can use. Instead, we'd probably assume heaven, order, law, all that stuff is just another law imposed upon us by God. And the problem with those kind of laws is they have a way of turning into something that other people try to use to impose their beliefs upon us. And we've all seen that. We've all been through it. Because they believe that they are the chosen few who are meant to bring God's order, as they understand it, to the world. That's what all this fundamentalist stuff is about that's going on in the world right now, whether it's Christian, Muslim, Jewish, and there's plenty of it to go around with all of them. Instead of understanding that we live in a universe that is already in perfect order, I mean, it worked great for 15 billion years before we got involved, but, you know, it's been in perfect order, Some people think that it's their job to impose their interpretation of what they think God's order is on the rest of the world. And they do it through violence. They do it through government control. They do it through guilt. They do it through all sorts of different ways in order to try to make the world look the way they think God wants the world to look. So I am here this morning to declare publicly, by the authority vested in me, all right, by the state of bliss, that not only is that kind of behavior not spiritually enlightened behavior, it's probably not going to work. Not just because the rest of us are not going to sit back and let other people use their moral and spiritual direction and supervision to try to control our life, but even more importantly, and this is kind of the crux of all this today, because the perfect order that the universe is already in is powerful enough and intelligent enough to be able to overcome even the most well-intentioned but misguided efforts to screw it up. The order of the universe is that intelligence. That's why, excuse me, as we look at the world as it is today, if you read the news, look on the internet, you got war, chaos, politics, all that stuff. We need to remember that spiritually there are only two rules. Okay, you ready? Rule number one, the universe is always in order. And rule number two, if the universe ever appears like it's out of order, refer to rule number one, right? Very, very simple. So we don't really need to feel threatened by anybody's religion, anybody's attitude, to be angry and fight against people who are trying to control us using spirituality. Now, this is the point in this kind of conversation where someone says, well, what about activism against injustice? Shouldn't we be allowed to impose order on people who are acting in a way that we consider to be unjust? And my answer is, it depends. It depends. That's a universal answer. We can always do what we need to do to impose order if we think we do it, but what's most important is what is in our consciousness when we do it. For example, years ago, we had a gentleman who started coming to this center when we were over at the Woodruff, and he was very, very dedicated to the cause of peace. So he went to a anti-something peace rally, whatever. The fact that it was anti ought to tell you something. But he came back in absolute shock because he said the people, while they were painting their peace signs, were the angriest people he'd ever been around. It was really amazing. And he said he didn't want to be involved in that, even if it was supposedly in the cause of peace, okay? So what we need to understand is our actions in anything we do will be a lot more effective if we remember that we can never direct or control life. We can only be in balance with it or out of balance with it. We can only be in harmony with life or out of harmony with life, okay? Remember, the most basic law of mind states that what we put out, we get back. Okay, love attracts love, anger attracts anger, peace attracts peace, hate attracts hate. So if we trust that order is the basic premise upon which all of life is based, order is heaven's first law, and our actions reflect our own deep faith in that belief, all right, then whatever comes out of our actions in any area of our life are going to be more effective and run much more smoothly. In other words, if we allow ourselves to see the order of life as a power for good, and we move with this order like a sailor moves with the waves and the winds and the tides on the sea without trying to move against them, we're going to be a whole lot happier with the result, okay? So when we hear the word order used in a spiritual context, the words that should come to mind for us are words like peace and balance and harmony and rhythm and even beauty. Beauty. It's very interesting. The writer Pearl Buck once said, I'll paraphrase, beauty requires order. What they really said was order is the shape upon which beauty depends, but beauty requires order. This is a very profound statement, especially when you take into account that our life is shaped by our beliefs, but our beliefs are shaped by our perceptions, because beauty requires perception. People who go around and pay no attention to the world don't see the beauty in it, because they don't see the order in it. Okay, it takes intelligence and it takes awareness to see the order that makes something beautiful to us, like a rainbow or a sunset or any one of those things. So let's talk about beauty for just a minute. Beauty is defined by Webster as a combination of qualities that delights the senses or appeals to the mind. Okay? We are all drawn to beauty, okay, to things that we consider beautiful. How many people like to be around beautiful people here? Of course, that's why I like to be around you guys, because you're all so beautiful, okay? We like the beauty of nature, whether it's a beach, a forest, a sunset, whatever it happens to be. We like to look as beautiful or as handsome as we can. We like our surroundings to be beautiful, our home, our car, all these things. But our concept of beauty is very subjective. It is. I happen to think my Toyota Prius is beautiful. My wife, who has a BMW, doesn't think it's very beautiful at all. She likes her little BMW convertible, you know, so it's very subjective. The point is, what you or I consider to be beautiful or not beautiful is not a problem unless we try to impose our idea of beauty or our idea of order on someone else. And this is especially true when we're talking about spiritual beliefs. So this is something else we need to know. If the kingdom of heaven is within each of us, as all the great teachers have told us, and if order really is heaven's first law, and the nature of order is beauty and harmony and balance, then whenever you hear the phrase divine order, that means that that beauty and harmony and balance are in us. That all ties together. When we use the term divine order, and you hear that sort of phrase used in different religious contexts, we're not talking about trying to figure out what God wants the world to look like or what God, how God wants us to behave. We're talking at the highest spiritual level about bringing order to our own thoughts and our own beliefs and our own feelings, so that then we can then move through the world and move through our own individual life, curious, open-minded, not judging others, all that, and see all the endless opportunities that are constantly there because of the order of the spiritual laws that we are living within. So what we're talking about here is that an ordered consciousness is a prerequisite for a healthy, prosperous, and successful life, filled with beauty and joy and love and all those things we want. That's what we mean when we say that we live in an ordered universe. Now, I have learned through the years that some people who come here to learn something to make their life better have trouble with this idea. They have trouble with it because they want to create a different kind of life experience for themselves, maybe in terms of relationship or prosperity or whatever it happens to be, but they don't want to be disciplined about it. They don't want to be disciplined. Maybe they don't like structure because they came out of a very rigid religious upbringing, which can explain their attitude, but it's not going to help them to change. Because most of us eventually come to realize that what we teach here is not about external control, it's about internal control. It's about inner control, okay? It doesn't have to be rigid either, all right? This isn't a strict, tight control like I think I can and do my affirmations and do my meditations and all that kind of thing. It doesn't have to be that difficult. In fact, once you get these ideas down, the very basic laws of this teaching, it becomes second nature, second nature. But in the beginning, and I know a number of you, I saw you come walking through the doors the first time, and I know it was true for me the first time I showed up. It takes a little self-discipline in the beginning, because we've all got a lot of old ideas in our mind that aren't doing us any good at all, particularly at the spiritual level. So in order to make this stuff work, we're going to have to learn some things, we're going to have to unlearn some things, and we're going to have to do some things. So let me talk about those. But before I do, some people can't allow themselves to do it, okay? They want to create a certain result, but they aren't willing to state their intention and then stick with it, okay? They want to stop thinking negative or fearful thoughts all the time, but they don't want to learn how to focus their thoughts in another direction. They want to learn how to create the things they desire, but they don't want to take the time to practice what they learn. We talked about spiritual practice last week. I mean, it's always interesting when I talk with someone whose life is a mess, and I try not to talk to those people any more often than I have to, but every so often you're in conversation before you realize it, okay? Talk to people who are immediately quick to tell you they have no money, they have a job they hate, they have no relationship, or what's even worse, a bad relationship. Their health is bad. They run through their litany of problems with Dr. Schultz used to call an organ recital, oh my liver, oh my kidney, all those kind of things, you know? And even if I nod pleasantly, trying desperately to get away, and they even if they ask me what my spiritual beliefs are, which they don't usually because they're so caught up in their own stuff, once I tell them very briefly, you can see them go like this, and they say, well, I've got a spiritual practice that I have had for a long time, and I'm very comfortable with it. Thank you very much. Which is fine with me. My only question is, how's it working for you so far? Okay? Which I try to keep in my inner voice and not my outer voice, okay? I truly believe that what we teach here is not the only answer. It is not the only answer, but it's a good one. It's a really, really good one. I've seen it work for a lot of people who actually have the self-discipline to use it, and I've seen it work in amazing ways time and time again, but it doesn't work automatically. It does not work automatically. It is not magic, okay? This teaching does require order. It does require commitment. It does require a certain amount of discipline, but not discipline imposed by God or by some rules of the church or from the pulpit or whatever we were raised with, but an inner focus and dedication to basic principles of thinking and living and being that are actually the same principles you're going to have to learn no matter what spiritual path you choose to walk if you want to gain control of your life. Now, Dr. Ernest Holmes writes in the Science of Mind textbook, what we call our textbook, he writes this. It's two sentences. Listen, he says, "The universe, both visible and invisible, is a spiritual system. We are a part of this spiritual order so indivisibly united with it that the entire cosmos is reflected in our mind." Isn't that amazing? We are so inseparable from this power that the entire cosmos and every possibility within it is reflected in our mind. That's an extremely powerful spiritual idea because it tells us where we need to be focusing our attention. We don't believe in this philosophy that we are here to discover and produce a certain kind of world. We also don't believe that our purpose here is to discover and implement God's plan. I mean, if God had a specific plan for us, trust me, we would know. We would be born with the plan clutched in our little fist or tattooed on our arm or something, and it would not be difficult and it would not be complicated, okay? We have an instruction manual. It's called the world. It's called your life. That's the instruction manual we have got, okay? The answers we are looking for are all around us. We would not have been placed on this abundant planet unless we're supposed to be rich. We would not have been given this amazing body unless we were supposed to be able to heal and to enjoy the body, especially when we have people that we love. We would not be on this planet with 7 billion, with a B, other people unless we were meant to give and receive love on a massive scale. On a massive scale. And we don't have to read that in anybody's holy book or take it from anybody else's religion, okay? It just makes sense, right? It just makes sense. Excuse me. It stands to reason that an intelligent creator can only have an intelligent creation. That's just common sense. And an intelligent creation has to be one that is always in perfect working order. Now, Lee was talking from Dr. Bitzer's reading about having the car. That's great. Your car can be in perfect working order, but if you never learned how to drive and you don't have the key, it doesn't make any difference. The car works absolutely perfectly, and it's totally useless to you under those circumstances. So we have to actually participate as part of the process, not just be a part of the process. We have to participate with the process in order for things to work. Now, normally at this point, somebody says, but what about spontaneity? Okay, shouldn't we just be open to whatever life brings? And there are people who believe that, which is great. And the answer to that question is, once again, it depends. In other words, it depends upon what we mean by being open. My teacher, Kennedy Schultz, and some of you were fortunate enough to have him as a teacher also, he used to say, there's nothing wrong with keeping an open mind, just make sure it's not so open that your brains fall out. Okay? Which is very, very true. So that may not be original with him, but it certainly sounded a lot like him if you knew him. So let's talk about that for a minute, about spontaneity, about the freedom to be who we are and to live our life the way we want to live. You see, order shows up in our world in two different ways, okay? One of them visible and one of them invisible, but they're both working simultaneously. Now, the most obvious kind of order, the one we see most, is something we call form, which may be a physical form of something like a podium or a car or a house, whatever, something we can feel or touch or see. Or it can be an entity like a relationship or a marriage or a business, whatever it happens to be. Form is the order that our thoughts take when we use the laws that we learned in school, the laws we learned in science class and physics class. All this takes place in what we call the world of effect. But a much more important level of order, is the order that exists at the invisible level, because this is what we call the level of cause. Level of cause. That's the level where the mental and spiritual laws that we did not learn in school do their work. That's the important level. This is the level where we tend to get sloppy, a little bit sloppy. We allow our thoughts to just come and go. We allow old beliefs to go unquestioned, even if they aren't working for us anymore. We let other people control our emotions, and then our emotions control us. The problem is some people live that way day after day, year after year, because they don't realize there's another option. They don't discipline themselves to look for a better option. You know, nobody told them. Of course, they didn't ask, so it's kind of a, you know, they've got a part of it. And they don't think there's anything they can do about all the chaos and confusion in their life, because they don't realize there's something they can do about the chaos and confusion in their mind that's attracting it. That's attracting it every moment of every day. But there is something they can do. There is something we can do, because we're all in this together. And you can call it spiritual discipline. You can call it self-control. Okay, I just like to call it inner awareness. That sounds very gentle to me. That is our conscious awareness of what we are thinking and feeling and believing and expecting at any given moment. Any given moment. And it is our awareness that we are capable of using proven mental and spiritual techniques to change our mind whenever we want. We have that power. We have that power. Now, the greatest gift that we have been given as spiritually aware, spiritually connected physical beings with consciousness, okay, is our ability to make choices. And the best of that is to make good choices. Now, we're always making outer choices, like whether you decided to get out of bed this morning or come here, where you decided to park, how you decided to come here. Those are all outer choices. But it's the inner choices that count. The inner private choices make the real difference between spiritual growth and spiritual stagnation, if you want to call it that. That's what allows us to put our own spiritual house in order, which is actually a pretty good analogy. I mean, if we could walk in and say a magic word at our house Saturday morning and your house was immediately spotlessly clean and in order, how many people would like that superpower? Okay? It's a good one. Okay, me too. It doesn't work that way. I've tried, okay? I've tried. Now I clean my house by writing a check. I find that that's the best way to do it. But we have to either clean our own house or pay somebody else to do it. Right? That's what we have to do. But when we're talking about the place that we live in here, okay, the place that we live in here, nobody else can clean it for us. Nobody, okay? So we have to do it ourselves or it won't get done. And that's where discipline comes in. You know, in every area of our life, if we follow consciously the most basic spiritual laws carefully and religiously, in the good sense of the word, we will be free to do so much more than if we just let ourselves drift with the undisciplined and unstructured beliefs of the world. If we give freely, save consistently, and spend intelligently, we will have more prosperity than we ever imagined. If we play freely, exercise consistently, and eat intelligently, our body is going to support us in anything we want to do. If we love freely and express gratitude and kindness to every single person everywhere, we will have more love in our life than we imagined. We will. But there are no shortcuts. There are no shortcuts. We can't be careless with our money, abusive to our body, and dishonest in our relationships, and expect to create a life full of health, wealth, and love. We just can't. We can't do that, okay? The greatest discipline we can ever practice is to always look beyond the appearance that we see of any apparent chaos, the discipline to look beyond the negatives that we see all around and to see the divine order that exists within it and it, around it, everywhere when we look. What we call chaos and confusion is always a temporary state, because when it looks like things are falling apart, it's just the universe loosening up a little bit. Okay, so we can take another opportunity to create a brand new form or new experience that works even better than the one that appears to be falling apart. When it looks like it's falling apart, that's order, working, doing exactly what it does. Even when our life changes radically in a way that we didn't see coming, you know, a divorce, an illness, whatever it happens to be, the same spiritual laws exist. And all the order of the universe is right there. All the order, the laws of the universe is right there. And the more centered we are, as often as we can be, the clearer we are about what we believe and the calmer we are when bad things happen, and the more we practice these principles in all our affairs, I heard that said somewhere once, the better off we're going to be, because the order is there and we're a part of it. This is the truth in your life, and this is the truth in mine, and so it is, and so it is. Thank you. Thank you. All right. Let's just take a few minutes. A lot of ideas here. Take the ones that resonated with you. I give them to you freely. Set aside the others for later. And let's just take a moment together, recognizing that life is a beautiful thing and the universe is a beautiful place. All the time, even when it doesn't appear to be, we have the ability to shift our consciousness and to shift our vision so that we can see the divine order of all of life. We have the ability, with this powerful mind that we have, which is one with the only mind there is, to choose our thoughts, to choose our beliefs, and to make better choices in every single part of our life. We have the ability to be in the presence of people who are negative, angry, whatever it happens to be, and to shift the consciousness of the entire room. We have the ability to move in traffic and be a center for peace, even on the most crowded, hectic traffic days of the holidays. We have the ability to be around family and to heal things that may have been painful for everyone for many, many years. And we do this simply by recognizing that we are a part of the order of life. So as we consciously do this in every single part of our life, at work, in our neighborhoods, with our friends and our family, and in everything we do, as we make the choice to see the order, that order becomes not only apparent, it starts acting in better ways. It starts moving things around, changing emotions, changing circumstances, creating prosperity, attracting abundance, healing emotionally and physically. And it does all these things because that's what it does. That's what Spirit does, and that's what we do. So knowing this, I give thanks for all that I have been given and thanks for all that I have yet to give and to share. I'm grateful for understanding this teaching and these laws. I'm grateful for the ability to use these laws in intelligent ways. And I'm grateful for all the love and the wonderful people in my life and in the world. This is my truth. I accept it, and I release it into consciousness, letting it be so. Join me in saying, and so it is.